So I graduated from Purdue in May of 2018. So when I came here and I was researching, you know, I didn't know that industrial automation existed per se. Like, it was out there, but I never knew about it. So this whole new world just kind of opened up for me. And I think it's just very poetic that I went to an engineering school, even though I was a business major. So what my friends are doing now, I told them that, hey, if you guys ever are looking for a new job, come to me. I work in your space. So I thought it was kind of cool how everything came full circle with that. But yeah, it's a really cool industry to be in. And I think this content creation is so huge. I'm for it. So then, you know, as people coming up like me can be more knowledgeable of what's out there.
South Africa was probably the highlight this year because, I don't know, it's just on the other side of the world, you know, quite literally. So that was a conference for Aviva. And, you know, they essentially put me up in a resort. You know, they had at a resort in South Africa. And so they put me up in the hotel and I got a sponsor to help pay for the flight. And I did my video content and just, it was actually, in some ways, it's kind of miserable because it's just so much work and I was jet lagged and it was like working all day doing video, up all night editing them, and so it was like difficult, but it was also awesome in the same sense that it's like I actually get to be here in South Africa, and how grateful am I that I get to do this, you know? Yeah.
So when did you know to make that transition from a 9-to-5 to doing this?
Yeah.
I've always been curious about how, like with Chris, how he does that on top of, you know, what he does at Rockwell. What inspired you to do this? Mm.
So I've always kind of done video on the side, and it's always kind of been a side hobby. I'd say reading Gary V's book, Crushing It, really helped change my mind, open, like kind of reprogrammed it. Mm-hmm. And that was at the beginning of 2018. And at that time, it was kind of getting to that point where I was at that job where, you know, it wasn't just a commute. It was the lack of vision, like my ideas were not being receptive to, you know, their mentality was like work 12, 14 hours a day. Like they really had no concept of just, I guess, balance or returning, diminishing returns, yeah. You know? And so that combined with everything else, it helped polarize me. Mm-hmm. And I've said many times before, it's like, if I was actually at my previous job, it was good enough that I would have probably stayed there. So, you know, ultimately why I left was like I could have made a little bit more money. I wanted a little bit more growth, and the culture there like was just kind of a little bit, I just felt like it wasn't, I was in a remote office, so okay. I didn't feel like we had that same connection with as being in a central, like, you know, you could go walk into Gary's.
Yeah, at any time.
Yeah, missing that, you just feel like you're kind of in a backseat, you know?
Yeah.
Quite literally. So that's why I moved. But case in point, if I had stayed there, I probably would just still be there, right? And so I went to another place, was making more money, had more responsibilities, but it was even worse culturally. And so I kind of knew I needed to do something. And I read Crushing It. I started posting videos more and more frequently because I'm like, hey, you know, let me actually try to do this. Mm-hmm. And then LinkedIn video started to explode. And I just happened to, by chance, come across it. I was gonna go share, it was actually the video I made was why I quit my previous job. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to share that just to kind of set the record straight. And yeah. I said in a very positive light, like I actually spoke highly about the previous company. I just wanted to actually give them almost like an exit interview type. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, even say to my friends, like, you know, yeah, I miss you guys. You guys are cool. Like, you are my colleagues. But at the same time, here's why I left. And it wasn't received super well by that company, but you know, whatever. I'm a content creator, right? That's what we do, right?
Yeah.
Tech lead gets, you know, his wife leaves him, and the first thing he does is make a video. My wife left me.
Yeah, sponsorships out of that somehow.
I hope that doesn't happen to me, but if it did, it's like I have my connection with my audience, so it's like I wanted to share that. I wanted to build that, even if it was kind of imaginary at first. Mm-hmm. You almost have to like. And just trick yourself into, and so that mindset shift, and then really just being unhappy, LinkedIn exploding, and then also just that combination of industrial automation, not really having that compelling, storytelling driven, cinematic vlogging type content. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I went to that's why I got that gig to go to South Africa, because they're like, hey, we throw on a really cool conference, Exchange, you know, IS Cubed, shout out. We like what Zach does. We want him to share our event with his audience and just help, you know, we see the value in that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's just kind of, that's how I knew to make the leap. When I actually made the leap, I didn't even really intend on quitting. I went to go talk to my boss. I'm like, I wanted to say like, hey, you know, I'm in a position where I'm feeling guilty about not being productive. Like my environment, I need, you know, just something needs to change. And he just kind of took it to the extreme. He's like, well, you can either just quit right now and I'll get your last paycheck, or, you know, it's just, it is what it is. And I was like, oh shit, you know? And, you know, there's an infinite array of possibilities that I saw. Like, do I just, you know, obviously work forever, or do I quit today, or do I finish the project that I'm on? Do I train my replacement, put in 2 weeks? Like, what do I do? And he just literally broke it down. He's like, it's either a zero or a one. And I was like, I guess it's a zero. So I ended up quitting that day, which I had kind of mentally prepared myself for. I had talked to my spouse, and there were some companies that wanted to do some freelance work with me. Mm-hmm. Nothing like super guaranteed or consistent, but I was like, you know, that opportunity is there as a fallback. And then also, obviously, it makes a great story. You know, guy quits his job, pursue content creation full time, mm-hmm. you know, went, you know, I posted that. I came home, made a video, posted it on LinkedIn. And people, like, it went a little bit viral, you know, and then that led to the next opportunity, and then it just kind of just grew from there, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a great space, because it's funny when I graduated from Purdue in May of 2018, so when I came here and I was researching, you know, I didn't know that industrial automation existed per se. Like, it was out there, but I never knew about it. So this whole new world has just kind of opened up for me. And I think it's just very poetic that I went to an engineering school, even though I was a business major. So what my friends are doing now, I told them that, hey, if you guys ever are looking for a new job, come to me. I work in your space. So I thought it was kind of cool how everything came full circle with that. But yeah, it's a really cool industry to be in. And I think this content creation is so huge. I'm for it. So then, you know, as people coming up like me can be more knowledgeable of what's out there.
Yeah. And so really the opportunities that I saw were connecting that large group of people that has no idea really about this industry. That's where the concept of the road trip came into play. It's like, let me just travel across the United States and actually see what happens. Like, let's see how industry is actually being changed across America by talking to sponsors, by talking to people actually, you know, at the water treatment plant or at the oil and gas facility. Yeah. So the way I guess we're doing this is, you know, if you want to just talk to me, then that's cool. Or if you want to address the camera, we're going to be doing like questions.
Okay.
And I have, you know, if you want to rephrase the question into the answer, and then that way, shit seems crazy. So that way it can kind of just be used as a standalone video for your own LinkedIn page, or, you know, the company stuff. So
yeah.
Why don't you share with us your name and spell it so I can have it for the record?
Yeah, so it's Andrew, last name Atchison, Atchison.
So for the first question, if you want to just say, hey, I'm Andrew Atchison, I work for Miller Resource Group, and we're focused in, or you know, I specialize in industrial automation recruiting, just kind of a little intro type blurb.
Okay. Hey, this is Andrew, work over at Miller Resource Group, specializing in packaging and food processing equipment and machinery, helping companies attract game-changing talent, both on the sales and engineering side.
Awesome. So what do you love about being a recruiter?
I think it goes back to my roots. My dad has been in sales for his whole life. I had kind of a passion for marketing, and it was just a mesh of the two. So I like bringing the sales and the marketing aspect to it. It's really, and helping clients build an empire, companies build an empire, and getting candidates closer and closer to their dream job. So just kind of has that feel good vibe to it. Okay. Yeah. So things I love about recruiting, I love helping companies build an empire, both on the sales and engineering side. And when talking to candidates, really digging in and helping them find their dream job. And just personally, it's just a part of me, recruiting is a mix of sales and marketing. My dad's been in sales for his whole life. I had a real passion for marketing. So I really thought that this was a perfect mesh of the two.
How do you compare sales and engineering? What makes a person, which direction they should go? How do you know when you're talking to a candidate?
Question one more time.
Recruiting is kind of, you said recruiting is sales and marketing, but for your clients, you're building not only engineers, but also sales. You're building that empire. So how do you compare those two?
Yeah, so how do you compare salespeople to engineers? So, I mean, sometimes it comes down to personality. A lot of, obviously, salespeople are extroverts. They're not afraid to get in front of people, to cold call, to do whatever it takes to get the deal or at least build that relationship. Engineers are more in the background, sometimes doing the work that might not fully get accredited, because obviously the bigger deal is getting that sale. But it's also equally important for the engineers in the background to be, building the machines or programming the machines. And they're the ones that aren't as comfortable stepping forward and necessarily taking that credit or even really wanting to be in that circumstance. So it's finding that balance and really digging into the individual and seeing, what their personality and their skill set is stronger towards.
Yeah, as an engineer, I always used to think engineering drove the world, but it's almost like sales really does drive the world, because, it's like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah, but you still need that engineering support, because, you could have a salesperson bring in 20 new orders, but if you don't have the staff to build it or make it, then you're kind of out of luck.
So if, let's say you're working with a company and they're at that point where, they're looking to grow, would you recommend adding a salesperson first, or would you recommend adding more engineering if they're pretty much at capacity?
Yeah, that's actually funny that you bring that up. I have a perfect example of that right now. This company's looking to grow, international company. They are looking to grow both on the sales and engineering side. And him and I sat down and really talked about making sure that the support is there first. So our point of emphasis is targeting engineers to bring on to their team, so that way they're fully staffed. So when we find, that game-changing salesperson that can come in and bring all of this business in, they're going to be fully ready and fully capable of fulfilling all orders.
So they're not frustrated by not being able to deliver on the promise.
Exactly. Because at the end of the day, it's all word of mouth. If a company is not able to fulfill an order, it's going to get word, and then they're going to lose out on that business, because me as a potential customer would look at them and say, well, it's not even given that I might get my machine, so why would I go to you when I could just go somewhere else where I know I'm going to get that?
Okay. So you mentioned this word a couple times, game changing. What does game changing mean to you?
It's someone that can come in and really make an immediate impact in an organization. Obviously, whether it's on the sales or engineering side, someone that's motivated money-wise, challenge-wise, advancement, being in a culture that motivates them to really work hard and just bring a lot to the table to help the company prosper.
Beautiful. What makes a great recruiter?
What makes a great recruiter? I think it's someone that is willing to actively listen. It's surprising that, we're obviously on top of that, finding that talent, being able to look at someone and see the potential in someone. But LinkedIn resumes don't tell the whole story. So we as recruiters need to ask as many in-depth questions as we can and then listen to what they're looking for. Because we might have the perfect job for them, but if they don't want it, we can't force them into something that they don't want. So making sure that we take the time to learn and see what they want, and that's transferable on the client side too. Digging into exactly what they're looking for. And we have a very thorough questionnaire that has been developed from our network that allows us to do that.
Beautiful. As a recruiter, what are some of the stigmas that you face?
What are some of the stigmas we face as recruiters? I think headhunter is, for some reason, a very negative term. At least in the marketplace, it's almost like we're a disruption to the workday. You'd be surprised how many candidates or potential candidates that we call that say, I'm at work, this is so unprofessional, and then hang up on us. Well, it's like, yes, we understand that. That's why we're strategic in our wording. And especially nowadays with social media, texting, things like that, we're able to better effectively communicate. So I think it's, I had to say it's negative because what we do is so special, and we're able to, you know, help companies build empires through people. It still, for some reason, has that negative connotation sometimes.
Changing the game.
Yeah.
So I want to dive deeper onto that. So calling a candidate while they're at their current job, would this be a scenario where you're reaching out to them for a position you're looking to fill, or reaching back out to them after they're already in contact with you looking for a job?
It's a little bit of both. So a lot of what we do is cold calling, reaching out to people immediately. But at the same time, you know, people do turn to us. I mean, I actually had an individual today give me a call during his lunch break, just checking in, seeing, you know, if I've come across anything that could be a fit for him. Unfortunately, we don't have anything right now. So it's kind of just after that cold call, building that relationship to where they're more comfortable. So that way, you know, we get more inbound traffic instead of necessarily outbound.
All right. I'm looking for a new job and I'm at my current employer. Why would my employer, I guess, care, or why should I have to feel like it's secretive, or like, how do I navigate that? How can we get employers to like change the way they think about that? I don't know. I said this when I made my video about quitting my job, was like, well, not when I made the video about why I left my previous job for my current previous job, was that I see the relationship between employers and employees changing. One where there's less friction, one where it's more freely open. Like, it should not be a big deal if I'm looking for another job, because it just is what it is, right? Why should I have to hide that from the employer? You want to speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, that's tough. I think it comes down to your own personal philosophy as to whether a company should really care. I personally think that they should. And for instance, in this office, if Gary knew that all of us were looking for a new job, if I'm Gary, I'd be freaking out, because then at any moment, you know, people could just be leaving left and right. So it's more of preparation on their part. So if I go in and, or if a candidate goes in, puts in his 2 weeks, obviously it's unfortunate, but it's better than knowing, I guess. Sometimes the unknown's better than knowing. Actually, scrap that. I don't like that answer. Give me a second to...
It's a very interesting dynamic.
I've never thought about it that way before. Because I think I hate using the word secretive, but you almost need to be secretive, because there has been situations where, or I'm sure there's been situations where a company does find out that you're looking to leave, and with that, they could just let you go without you even having something else.
That's a good point.
In play. So it's kind of covering you as the candidate more than the client, because then you have, you know, loyalties in question. So I think it's easier to answer it in terms of the candidate side.
But then the company's looking at the employee as the problem and not looking at themselves as to why. I mean, there's obviously the case where it's just not a fit. It's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with the candidate. Nothing,
yeah.
And it's just not a fit. So in which case, it should, you know, it'd be better off. You know, the employer should almost help the candidate in that case.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's a good thing for the client to look in the mirror and really see what went wrong. Because, I mean, if all companies want to build this perfect culture, the perfect culture doesn't exist. What we have here is probably I'm biased when I say this, but it's the closest we're going to get to a perfect culture. But even then, obviously, sometimes you need to take a step back. And if you bring someone on that, you know, might not be meshing per se, and then they decide to leave, or you find out that they're looking, you know, maybe that's not necessarily the worst thing, but it's still, at the same time, you have that reputation in the marketplace of having this great culture. But if you have so many employees being uncertain of their future at this company, then that damages that. Because if I'm perfectly happy at my job, but then, you know, two or three people leave out of nowhere, well, then I'm freaking out as the employee, like, well, what's going on that I'm unaware of? So then it kind of just builds a bad camaraderie. So now I'm like kind of looking over my shoulder. I'm paying attention when certain people are interacting, or if someone goes into the boss's office, I'm like, well, I wonder what's going on now.
Yeah. And it was, it was kind of unfortunate. I wish all my previous companies well, but after I made my video of why I left my, so I made two videos. Mm-hmm. One, I used to work for my parents' mm-hmm. system integration company. I actually ended up taking that business over. When I found out I was having a daughter, I kind of spun that business down and went and got a job at an engineering firm, mm-hmm. System integrator. And that job I actually just got by reaching out to the CEO on LinkedIn. So mm-hmm. Got the interview and just I got the job. And so when I left that job to my most previous system integrator that I worked for, that was the one I used the recruiter to help get, and also I made a video of why I left that previous company. Mm-hmm. When I quit to just go out on my own, I made a video of me quitting and what I'm going to do. I didn't actually really talk about the previous employer because I was just like, you know, this is no point in talking about it. But when I made the video, it had actually been about 6 months since I had left. You know, I'd gotten settled in, and I just wanted to share that almost to like my previous colleagues, because they're probably like, well, why did, you know, was it us, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and I just wanted to say, like, it is what it is. I'm just being authentic mm-hmm. and transparent about that. I hope that, you know, I spoke highly of the company. I was hoping that they would maybe take it constructively. What ended up happening, by coincidence, or who knows if I had influence on it or not, but like another person quit like a few days later. And so they're like thinking that it's my fault. And I'm like, shoot, that's not what I wanted. But
yeah, it's sometimes a domino effect unintentionally.
If at the end of the day, if that's how that person felt, then it's not really my fault either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it's tough.
I'm talking about this too much, but I feel like it's just so
it's important.
Story connects with your guys' industry mm-hmm. recruiting, because it's a struggle, right? You only have one life. How are you supposed to know if you didn't take that leap? You know, and it sucks, but I shared this Forbes article that showed like typical trajectory of income over your earning career. Mm-hmm. If you stay at one company, you're pretty much level. Mm-hmm. But if you're getting a 10-15% raise each time you move, mm-hmm. like, let's say you move every 3 years, which I think is like the average tenure now, mm-hmm. you're going to make 50% more over the course of your lifetime, which is pretty significant. So to just stay in one job, now if they're kind of forward thinking and they're moving you up quickly based on performance and all that, then mm-hmm. then by all means stay at that company. But if they're not, you know, if they kind of have more of a track type of ladder mm-hmm. mindset, putting in your time, you know, that's not really the world that we really live in now.
Yeah, that's something I've noticed, is it's shorter stints at companies, three to seven years, mm-hmm. and then they're out. But you know, I mean, there's some people that have been at companies for 20 years, and I'll talk to them and say, you know, it's kind of just run its course. Yeah. It's time to move on. So that mindset's it's fine. I mean, at the end of the day, like you said, you have one life. You got to do what's best for you. And if it's leaving to do bigger and better things, then so be it.
Yeah. And even though me leaving that company to go work at a new company, make a little bit more, have a more responsibility, I ended up not liking it. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it led me in the path of which I'm at now. So
yeah, you got to try something to know if you like it or not. So
are we gonna get over there?
Monitor just went out.
All right, we'll swap the battery out. Okay. Hold that thought. Sorry, I just
kind of pause.
I broke my own train of thought. Oh dang, we've been going 25 minutes.
Yeah,
this is a really good conversation.
Yeah.
I've tried my best not to ramble. Employed for a year, but I think that's the advantage that we as recruiters have, is that we go in and we have these in-depth conversations and we ask what exactly happened in the shorter stints, or, you know, what happened, why haven't you been working for, you know, a year, even less than a year, maybe even more than a year. And there could be family reasons, health reasons. It kind of just depends. So that's why when we'll send the resume to companies, but then we also tell the story about the candidate and say, hey, first glance, you might think that this person's a job hopper, or hey, I know you're going to notice he hasn't worked since 2018, but this is what's been going on. So that's way beneficial, because if I'm that person and I just apply, now I'm in some database, I have an algorithm, just kind of sorting through, and that might be a red flag. So they might not even have a conversation. So I really think that that's the biggest advantage that we as recruiters have, is presenting that, so then companies aren't freaking out about stuff like that.
Yeah. Do you ever tell a client know or a candidate like, hey, no, you're not a good fit for us, or like your expectations aren't reasonable, or?
Yeah, candidates all the time, because at the end of the day, we have our jobs that we need to fill from our clients. We're looking for those types of people. As much as we want to talk to everyone and help everyone find a job, that's not our job. Right. It's helping clients connect to the candidate. On the client side, it's something that as you have more experience in, you can say no. So right now with me, when I've been here for just over a year, I'm kind of now at that stage of figuring out what's a good job to work on and what's not a good job to work on. So at first, you know, you have all this coming in, you're like, oh my God, I have so much stuff to work on, this is awesome. But then sitting back and looking at it, like the compensation ranges are not ideal. They're maybe in a very like small area up in, you know, Minnesota or even Idaho, North Dakota, but they want to find someone local. Sometimes there isn't anyone local, so you need to open to relocation.
Right, and then that becomes even harder.
Yeah, but then having those conversations though gives us more data to work with, so then we can go back to them and say, hey, we've worked with companies just like yours on roles like this. This is what they're paying. So do you really want your competitors to be paying more? You know, if you were to pick between your company and this company, but this company is offering more, I'm going to go to the one that's offering more.
Move to the middle of nowhere.
Exactly.
So it's a give and take, but it's something that I've definitely learned, and probably one of the biggest pieces of advice that pretty much everyone here has given is you have the power to say no.
How does a typical engagement go with a new client?
It depends. My strategy is I'll send an email kind of introducing myself, giving some information about Miller Resource Group as a whole, and then kind of have a plan of action within the email saying, I am going to be reaching out to you. What's the best time? What's the best number to reach you at? Sometimes they respond, sometimes they don't, but I always either have the main number of their direct line or cell phone, and then I'll call them. And then I have a series of four voicemails that I leave. The first one's just, hey, left you an email, blah, blah, blah. Second one, this is what we do. This is how I can be of value to you. Because the biggest thing is answering the question, how can we help you? Because that's what everyone wants to know. You know, the first 10 seconds of a call, if I am offering you no value, then I'm wasting your time. So I dive into that. And then three, if I have a candidate that I'm really excited about, an NPC is what we call it, you know, I try to act excited on the phone. I give tidbits about it, but not too much about the candidate. I'm just enough to give them a taste. And then four, it's a really long voicemail. Hey, timing's off. You know, I know I've emailed you, I've called you, so my contact info is ingrained in your devices. If you ever need anything, give me a call. And then I'll reach back out in like 3 or 4 months.
Okay, so that's like kind of a life cycle.
Yeah, so that's at least my life cycle. It's different for everyone, but then now it's easier to, you know, LinkedIn's in play now, so now we can send messages on LinkedIn or even just send a connection request, because then that opens up for us to be able to get an email or a cell phone number, or even just communicate that way.
Yeah. So, would you share what you know about or what do you think Industry 4.0 is for the documentary?
No.
I think I know what it is. I took a class on it in school, but that's about it. I know it's Industry 4.0. I'm going to guess it's connecting. Is it more cloud-based? So it's having technology speak with technology almost. So having technology go to the cloud, and then from that we're able to then, so I guess if I have a machine, and then all, it's feeding all of this data, all this information to the cloud, and then let's say the cloud picks up this data, and then the cloud comes to me on my device saying, hey, the machine, something's about to break down or something's not working. Is that
exactly it?
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
again, not.
You're right. It's connecting machines to machines, and you know, you mentioned, you know, predictive analytics there, and you know, anomaly detection, machine learning, AI, big data, cloud. But really, it's connecting machines to machines, but it's connecting people to people. At the end of the day, Industry 4.0 is actually more about people than it is about the technology. It's a paradigm shift, and it's why I'm really excited about sharing it in the documentary. You crushed this interview, dude.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
So, Andrew, yeah, that's it, man. If there's any questions you have or anything else you want to share?
No, I'm good right now. I'm looking forward to seeing how this turns out.
Do you have any, last question. What are the hot jobs right now that you're, some of those titles that you're...
Yeah, hot jobs I'm working on right now. Working on, I actually just picked this up a couple days ago, a regional sales manager in the Pacific Northwest, industry trailblazer, global technology leader. They grade, sort, and palletize fresh fruit and vegetables. So looking for someone to cover a couple states in the Pacific Northwest that's got a background in capital equipment on the food processing and packaging side. And then actually same company, just in the Northeast. So someone in Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York are the three hot states that we're looking at.
And so they would be selling the
equipment, yeah. So they'd be in charge of a territory, they're selling the company's equipment, and then the applications for the equipment are sorting, palletizing, and packing fresh fruits and vegetables.
Very cool.
So yeah, it's a great company. I'm excited to work with them, so.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it, dude. We'll see you on LinkedIn, dude.
Yeah, thank you, sir.